Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we plunge into a stack of compelling sources to extract the most crucial knowledge for you. Today, we're taking a truly insightful deep dive into a topic that, while seemingly simple, profoundly impacts our personal lives, our workplaces, and even our global society. The immense power of introverts in a world that often feels, well, overwhelmingly loud.
Absolutely. Our primary source for this deep dive is Susan Cain's seminal work, Quiet: The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. Our mission today isn't just to summarize, but to maybe unravel some deeply embedded cultural assumptions.
Sure.
And hopefully spark some significant aha moments for you, whether you see yourself as, you know, a quiet observer, maybe a dynamic leader, or just someone trying to better understand the people around you.
That's right. We've got Cain's comprehensive research, historical insights, and some really vivid real-life examples to guide us. So what does it truly mean to leverage the strengths of introversion, not just for individuals, right, but for the collective good in our noisy modern world? Let's peel back the layers and uncover some surprising truths.
Okay.
Before we really dig into the core ideas of quiet, let's spend just a moment on the author herself, Susan Cain. Her background is actually quite fascinating and maybe a bit unexpected for someone who became such a powerful voice for introverts.
Right. She's a Harvard Law School graduate.
Yeah.
Spent years working as a corporate attorney on Wall Street.
Exactly. High pressure stuff.
Totally. And what's truly compelling about her journey is how her own personal experience really shaped her research. I mean, imagine navigating that kind of high octane, very aggressively extroverted environment of Wall Street as a self-described introvert.
Mm-hmm. Must have been tough.
Yeah. That insider perspective gave her this incredible, authentic lens. You know, she didn't just write a book.
Yeah.
She kind of lived the core conflict.
That makes sense.
And then she dedicated, what, 7 years to researching Quiet, meticulously weaving together her lived experience with these deep dives into psychology, neuroscience, cultural history, all of it.
Wow, 7 years.
Yeah. She became this brilliant translator, basically, taking complex academic ideas and making them incredibly accessible, engaging for everyone.
And her TED Talk, that just blew up, didn't it?
Oh, massively. One of the most viewed ever. It just clearly showed her unique ability to articulate these ideas and really spark a global conversation.
It's that mix, isn't it? Personal vulnerability plus rigorous research. That's what makes Quiet so impactful. And at the heart of it is this powerful concept she calls the extrovert ideal. Can you break down what that is for us and how Cain argues it really came to dominate our society?
Sure. So Cain posits that the extrovert ideal is this pervasive, often unconscious cultural belief that the ideal person, the one most likely to succeed, be admired, seen as a leader, is, well, gregarious, bold, charismatic, comfortable in the spotlight.
The person who speaks first and loudest?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
The one who thrives in group settings. Cain meticulously traces his origins back to the early 20th century, specifically in America. Before that, she argues, American culture primarily valued something different, what she calls character.
Character, meaning like inner qualities.
Exactly. Inner moral strength, integrity, your sense of duty, that kind of thing. Less about outward show.
Okay. So less about presentation, more about inner fortitude.
Precisely. But then, as America industrialized, society became more mobile, more urbanized. The focus shifted dramatically.
How so?
Well, people weren't just living and working in small communities where everyone knew their character. They suddenly had to sell themselves, often to strangers, in these competitive marketplaces.
Ah, okay. So personality became like performance.
You got it. This is where personality, external charm, charisma, the ability to network became paramount. Think about the rise of figures like Dale Carnegie.
Oh, yeah. How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Exactly. That book taught millions not just to be themselves, but to actively perform a certain type of outgoing, confident self.
That's a huge shift. It really explains why so many of us feel this pressure, you know, to be constantly on or performative, even when it doesn't feel natural.
Precisely. And this created a cultural bias that now it permeates everything from how our schools are set up with all the group projects.
Well, yeah, constant group work.
To the open plan offices and endless meetings in our workplaces. We're constantly pushing this extroverted model. But this raises a really crucial question for all of us, doesn't it?
Which is?
What are we actually losing by systematically undervaluing introverts?
Yeah.
By pressuring them to act against their natural temperament?
Mm.
Cain argues it's not just a loss for individuals who might feel drained or misunderstood.
Yeah.
It's a massive loss for society as a whole.
How so?
we're potentially missing out on immense talent, unique perspectives, the kind of deep, reflective thinking that introverts often bring. We're maybe sacrificing depth for perceived dynamism.
That's a really thought-provoking point. And Kane, she really doesn't pull any punches when she challenges some deeply ingrained assumptions, especially around leadership.
Oh, absolutely.
We're so conditioned to think the best leaders are always the most charismatic, outspoken ones, right? But she paints a very different picture.
She does. Her research and the studies she cites reveal that introverted leaders often perform better than extroverted ones.
Really? Better?
Yeah, especially when they're leading proactive, skilled teams. The thinking is they tend to listen more intently. They process information more deeply before speaking. They're less likely to just dominate the conversation.
So they empower others more.
Exactly. They often encourage their team members to contribute their own ideas, which can lead to more innovative, more thoroughly vetted solutions. It's not about being the loudest voice, but about creating space for all the voices.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Think of someone like Warren Buffett, his legendary patient analytical approach to investing, his incredible ability to resist market frenzy, crowd psychology.
Right, classic introverted strengths.
Totally. He spends hours in quiet contemplation, reading, thinking. It lets him make these incredibly rational, long-term decisions that often go against the grain. His discomfort with the spotlight doesn't hinder his leadership. It actually fuels a methodical process, substance over flash.
Which leads to more sustainable success, maybe.
Often, yes, instead of just risky short-term gains.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. Kane also tackles the modern workplace's obsession, and it is an obsession, with constant collaboration, open-plan offices. She suggests it might actually kill creativity.
That's a powerful counterargument, isn't it, to a norm we just accept. She brings in research showing that group brainstorming, despite being super popular
everywhere,
often produces fewer ideas and lower quality ideas than individuals thinking alone.
Why is that?
Well, think about it. In group settings, dominant personalities often take over, right? People might self-censor, or they just kind of conform to the first few ideas shared. Herd mentality a bit.
Yeah, I can see that.
Whereas many of the world's big innovations, like Steve Wozniak designing the first Apple computer, that didn't happen in a crowded meeting room.
No, it's solitary work, right?
Hours of solitary, focused work, allowing for deep concentration, imaginative problem solving. So it raises this critical question about how we design our environments.
Are we building spaces for deep thinking or just constant interaction?
Exactly. Are our workplaces and classrooms set up for optimal innovation or just surface level communication sometimes?
Yeah.
We might be inadvertently stifling the very creativity we say we want.
That's profound. Okay, so it brings us to the core question. Is introversion just a choice? Something we can just change? Or is there something deeper, maybe biological? Kane digs right into the science.
She absolutely does. She draws on some groundbreaking longitudinal studies, particularly by a researcher named Jerome Kagan.
Kagan, okay. What did he find?
He identified that temperamental differences show up incredibly early, like in infancy. He talked about high reactive versus low reactive babies.
High reactive.
Yeah, so some babies, the high reactive ones, might react really strongly to new stimuli, a loud noise, a bright toy. They might flail, cry, show distress.
And low reactive.
They'd stay relatively calm, observant. Kane argues these early differences are fundamental. They're innate, deeply wired aspects of our nervous systems, not just learned behaviors or shyness.
Wow. So it's not just deciding to be shy or outgoing. It's literally how our brains react to the world.
That's the argument. And if you connect this to the bigger picture, different brain chemistries play a role. Dopamine, for instance.
The reward chemical.
Right. It influences whether we seek out high or low stimulation. Extroverts tend to be more sensitive to dopamine's reward-seeking effects, driving them towards external stimulation, novelty, social interaction.
And introverts
often have nervous systems more attuned to subtle cues. They prefer lower stimulation because they can get easily overstimulated. Mm-hmm. But, and this is crucial, Kane is very clear, biology isn't destiny.
Okay.
This is where she introduces something called free trait theory from psychologist Brian Little. And it's really empowering.
Tell us more about free trait theory. That sounds like a vital bridge between our innate selves and navigating the world.
It really is.
Yeah.
Little's theory basically explains that, yes, we have natural temperamental boundaries, our sort of default setting. But these aren't rigid cages.
We can stretch.
We can stretch considerably. An introvert, for example, can absolutely act in an extroverted way. give a passionate presentation, lead a tough meeting, network energetically.
Only it.
If it's for what Little calls a core personal project,
yeah,
something they're genuinely invested in, something deeply meaningful that aligns with their values or goals.
Okay, so it has to matter.
Exactly.
Right.
But, and this is the critical part, Little emphasizes the absolute need for restorative niches.
Restorative niches, like downtime.
Essential periods of quiet time and space afterwards to recharge your energy, avoid burnout. It's about strategic energy management, you know, not changing who you fundamentally are, but understanding how to operate effectively within your natural system.
That makes so much sense. It gives you agency without demanding a complete personality transplant.
Right.
And this deep dive also broadens our view beyond just Western culture. Is this extrovert ideal a universal thing?
What's really fascinating here is that it's decidedly not. Kane points out that many Asian cultures, for example, have traditionally placed a much higher value on traits we often associate with introversion.
Like what?
Restraint, humility, careful analysis, listening, modesty. In some cultures, speaking out too much or dominating a conversation might be seen as impolite, even foolish.
Interesting.
So this cross-cultural analysis really powerfully shows that personality values are cultural constructs. They're shaped by history, tradition, not universal truths. What's admired in one place might be viewed very differently somewhere else.
And this cultural difference even impacts how societies think about influence, right? You mentioned soft power.
Precisely. Kane contrasts the American preference, often for hard power, direct, assertive, outspoken influence, with concepts of soft power.
Which relies on
more indirect methods, building relationships,
yeah,
empathy, quiet conviction. She gives the amazing example of Eleanor Roosevelt, a self-described introvert. Her conscience-driven advocacy, her deep empathy, her ability to connect personally, that allowed her to wield immense influence, not through loud speeches, but through quiet persistence and moral authority.
It really proves that quiet conviction can be incredibly powerful.
Absolutely. And it connects back to our earlier point about Warren Buffett's cautious long-term thinking versus, say, the risk-taking culture that some argue contributed to the 2008 financial crisis.
Mm.
It's a stark contrast. Valuing quiet deliberation versus maybe bold, unexamined action.
So let's get practical. For those of us listening who identify as introverts or maybe who live, work, even parent alongside them, what are some powerful, actionable takeaways from Kane's work? How can we navigate this extrovert-dominated world more effectively?
Kane offers a whole wealth of insights. For individuals, I think the core message is about self-acceptance, first of all, and then intelligent energy management.
Understanding your needs.
Yeah. Understanding your optimal working conditions. Maybe you need that quiet corner or dedicated time for deep work, and strategically planning those restorative niches after social demands. That's crucial.
More like an introverted manager planning thinking time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe scheduling thinking time before big decisions, or designing meeting formats that allow everyone to contribute thoughtfully, maybe soliciting written ideas beforehand so it's not just the loudest voice winning.
Leveling the playing field.
It ensures a diversity of input, which usually leads to better decisions.
And for parents and educators, how can we nurture quieter kids without trying to fix them or push them into an extroverted mold?
This is such an important question, isn't it? Are we truly valuing a child's inner world? Kane strongly advises resisting that cultural pressure to overschedule kids with endless group activities.
Let them have downtime.
Yes. And actively nurture their deep interest, whatever they are. Provide alternatives to constant group work. And, crucially, validate and celebrate their quiet contributions. It's about creating space for them to just be themselves, explore their thoughts, grow at their own pace.
And workplaces. Beyond just meetings.
Leaders can create more inclusive spaces, physically and culturally. Maybe moving beyond just fully open plan offices to include quiet zones or private workspaces. Reforming meeting cultures, like we said. It's fundamentally about designing environments where all temperaments can not just survive, but actually thrive.
Leveraging everyone's unique strengths.
Exactly.
Wow. This deep dive into quiet has truly challenged me, and I hope you listening too, to rethink so many fundamental assumptions about success, leadership, how we interact. What's the biggest takeaway for you? What final thought should our listeners ponder?
For me, the most valuable lesson, I think, is that human temperamental diversity, having both introversion and extroversion, is a feature, not a bug, of human nature. Introversion isn't a deficit to overcome.
It's a strength.
It's a powerful, essential way of being, offering unique strengths that beautifully complement extroverted abilities. The book fundamentally shifts our perspective, doesn't it? From seeing introversion as a problem to solve to recognizing it as a profound strength to leverage. For individuals, yes, but also for the good of society.
So what does this all mean for you as you move through your day?
Well, I'd encourage you to maybe consider how you can actively foster more inclusive environments in your own life, at home, at work, in your community. Just by consciously recognizing and valuing the diverse strengths of all personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it means creating more space for quiet contemplation in your own schedule.
No.
Or maybe just making a more concerted effort to listen intently to those quieter, more reflective voices around you. The quiet revolution that Susan Cain talks about, It isn't about introverts taking over.
Yeah.
It's about rebalancing how we think about and appreciate human temperament for better, more thoughtful outcomes for absolutely everyone.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.